Coming up on Tech News Today, Microsoft admits RT was a flop, and they pay for it, too, $900 million worth. Ready to pay again for all your iOS apps? That's the theory, anyway. And Sony might be prepping a camera attachment, a pretty nice camera attachment for your phone. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, July 19th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show. We try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, available in video and audio, however you want it, at twit.tv/TNT. Let's start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Apple acquired crowdsourced location data company Locationary. The deal includes Locationary's technology and team. Apple did not disclose a price when it confirmed the deal to All Things D. The Toronto-based company helps keep business information and location data up to date.
Google's second quarter came in below analyst expectations, but still managed to be impressive. The company consolidated revenue of $14.1 billion, up 19% from a year-ago quarter. Net income of $3.23 billion, and earnings per share of $9.56. Analysts were hoping to see Google's revenue jump at least 20% year over year. Might have been a little ambitious. The company only missed that, though, by 1%. Google's stock initially jumped to an all-time high back on Monday after the revenue results dipped about 5% in after-hours trading.
Analysts expect the world because Microsoft reported its earnings and they were below expectations. The company took a $900 million charge for its inventory of Surface tablets. Microsoft earned 66 cents per share. That would not include the Surface charge, but analysts expected 75 cents per share. An analyst at Pacific Crest Securities said this was the biggest miss they've seen from Microsoft. Are there any silver linings in the report? Revenue was up 10%. Revenue was $19.9 billion, but Wall Street expected $20.7 billion.
Michael Hayden, former head of the U.S. CIA, told the Australian Financial Review that if Huawei would have been allowed to build the backbone of telecommunications networks, it, quote, would have shared with the Chinese state intimate and extensive knowledge of the foreign telecommunications system it is involved with. Huawei spokesman Scott Sykes told Bloomberg, quote, these tired, unsubstantiated, defamatory remarks are sad distractions from real-world concerns related to espionage, industrial, and otherwise. And the fight goes on.
Kevin Paulson explains in a post on Wired that MIT lawyers are filing a motion to intervene in his Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, lawsuit over thousands of pages of Secret Service documents about the late activist and coder Aaron Swartz. He explains back in February, the Secret Service denied his request for any files it held on Swartz, citing an FOIA exemption that covers sensitive law enforcement records that are part of an ongoing proceeding. Paulson says MIT is afraid the release of Swartz's file will identify the names of people at MIT who helped the Secret Service and prosecutors pursue felony charges against Swartz for his bulk downloading of academic articles from MIT's network in 2011.
Eric Voorhees, no relation to Jason Voorhees, just sold a Bitcoin gambling site called Satoshi Dice for 126,315 Bitcoins. That translates to over 11 million U.S. dollars. The identity of the buyer is not known, but BitCapital's John Bridge was surprised that it sold for such a high amount and believes the site was picked up by an existing gaming institute.
Yeah, and Bitcoin. NPR reports that 24-year-old Stephen Balaban is developing an alternative operating system for Google Glass. Balaban was one of the developers behind a facial recognition app for Glass. Google banned the app after several people, including U.S. government officials, expressed concern over widespread facial recognition. Google Glass's Explorer Edition comes with some restrictive terms of service that, among other things, let Google deactivate the device if they don't like what you're doing with it.
VLC for iOS is back in the App Store. Videoland's latest version of the multi-format player and decoder runs on iOS 5.1 or later and supports the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPod Touch. It's open source, and its code is now available online by licensed under the Mozilla Public License version 2, as well as the GNU General Public License version 2 or later. Now, the first is applicable for distribution in the App Store, which was a missing element and why Apple pulled VLC from the App Store back in January 2011.
Leap motion controllers should arrive in stores next week, and the New York Times is on it. The New York Times Idea Lab created an official app that lets you page through stories with a wave of your hand. Holding your finger up Harrison Ford style, scrolls through a menu of news story. Then you swipe to select a particular story. Once you're done, just shake your hand to send the story back into the carousel of headlines.
Android users, you could be making money just by unlocking your phone. There's a new app called Lock It, and it launched today. It places ads on your lock screen. When you swipe to unlock your device, you get paid. Now, the app doesn't force you to view full ads. If you want to watch something like a trailer, you'll actively have to choose that. Regardless of which way you swipe, you'll get paid a whopping 1 cent per swipe, and that's capped at 3 cents per hour. So go for it.
Yeah. Joanna Stern from ABC said she's earned 6 cents this morning since she installed. Wow. You know, keep that in mind. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a website, a blog, a portfolio, an online gallery, whatever you need to create. If you want it to look good, like with an award-winning design, and you want it to be reliable so that it's up when people want to visit it, try out Squarespace.com. I was using it just this morning. Veronica shot a little video last night from Woodstock at San Diego Comic-Con. Fast and easy for me to just go and grab that video, embed it in a block, drag it into the post, write a little description. Boom, it's up. Squarespace keeps rolling out new product features, integrations, and templates to make sure you get the most from their recent innovations. They have a 24/7 support team, email or chat, and plans start as low as $8 a month. For software and hosting, Squarespace is a real value. Everything is drag and drop. As I mentioned, their page builder tool called Layout Engine enables you to customize pages in seconds. You just add those blocks of content. Boom, you're in. The Style Editor tool allows you to select fonts, colors, layouts, customize templates, make them uniquely yours. They have an e-commerce solution if you want to do a store. They have a great mobile experience so that if your site shows up on a small screen, it looks appropriate. It looks right. It has all the information, but it fits that screen. And you can publish to and from social media with a few clicks. Refresh your site content from the places you like to post. Twitter, you like that? Instagram, sure. Pinterest, Google+, LinkedIn, bunch more. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com. You don't need to sign up for anything but a free account. You don't need to give them your social security number or your height, your weight, your blood type. You don't even have to give them your credit card number. Just start building a website. If you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT7 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, whether it's a monthly or an annual plan. Don't forget, annual plans come with a free domain registration. That's Squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT7. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Darren Kitchen is out sick today, unfortunately, so we won't have him. But Len Peralta, internet cartoonist, is here to illustrate the episode. Good to have you back, Len.
It's good to be back, Tom, and it's good to see you again. I haven't seen you in about 2 weeks. So.
I know. It's good to see you, too. Is your drawing hand warmed up for today's stories?
My drawing hand is always ready. I was born ready. I was ready since first call.
That's cool. All right, let's get right into Microsoft. As I mentioned, having an earnings report that didn't quite hit what analysts wanted. And usually what that means is analysts thought, hey, we think Microsoft should make this much money given what they're doing. Microsoft says, nah, well, we didn't. Revenue rose 10%, but that was short of expectations. And it was pretty much buoyed by Microsoft Office. The profit was 59 cents a share, also short of expectations. $900 million, as we mentioned, wrote down for unsold Microsoft Surface RTs. Well, Microsoft, I'm not part of the problem. I plunked down for your silly tablet clicky thing right here, but apparently nobody else did. So Windows sales did rise, but a lot of analysts pointed out that there was a lot of deferred revenue helped that sales rise. So that's even a little soft. When you look at all these numbers, guys, and you know that Microsoft just went through a reorg that says we're going to be a devices and services company, and all the revenue seems to be coming from software, and particularly Microsoft Office this quarter. How's that going to work, Ayaz?
Well, for a while, we've saw Microsoft's reports, and they were really good, and they were buoyed by the Xbox, which is their device that sold really well. So it seems like because the Xbox is on the end of its life and the new one is coming out, or the Xbox 360 is the end of life, or whatever they're saying about it, that's probably going to help Microsoft in the long run. But the big reorg that Microsoft announced, that's showing a much longer-term strategy. While money might be coming from software right now, we're seeing Microsoft put out a lot of software for iOS. They're going to the subscription-based services as opposed to just buying it once. And I think that this charge for the $900 million for the Surface RT, Microsoft is betting long-term on this because it looks like when it comes to Windows, with that single Windows division, Windows Phone and Windows RT, for no reason, they should not exist separately. They probably will merge. So Surface RT and phones will probably run the same things. They'll have the same apps, and things will shift in the long run. But right now, this just looks lousy for the quarter.
I don't know. I mean, a device and services company that has all revenue coming from one is not—that's not an unattainable goal. I mean, you could argue that Google is both, and it's all services, right? You could argue that Apple is both, and it's all hardware. So it sounds to me like Microsoft had just a crappy quarter. The Surface RT was a bust. I don't think anyone could argue differently at this point. $900 million write down. Yikes! It just wasn't a good idea. Surface Pro, a whole different ballgame. You got a reorg. You have service entities within Microsoft that are now working together. I really don't think that it can go downhill from here for Microsoft.
Well, and I guess you're calling Microsoft Office a service, and that is what it is now. So that's fair to say. The services part is doing okay. And a lot of people are looking at this saying, you know, if they hadn't done the Microsoft Surface and done all the marketing around it, we probably wouldn't have seen as wide a variety of Microsoft tablets out there from other manufacturers get the attention. And that was sort of one of the ideas with Microsoft doing this. But could they just have done the Surface Pro instead of the RT? I mean, the RT just seems like it was crippled. It was hard to understand.
It's the most curious release ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, let's think about this. Why did Microsoft do that? Why didn't they just... They had to have something for the holiday season? Is that what's going on here? And just hoped that somehow people would buy it like hotcakes?
I think it might have just been like a toe in the water introduction to Microsoft doing a PC or a tablet at all, because this didn't directly compete with all of its old PC partners, right? And that's why the Pro was staggered off. Why the RT came out at all, like I was saying, long term, the idea that a lot of manufacturers are using ARM processors, Microsoft probably wants to woo companies like Samsung or Acer and be like, hey, you guys are making Android tablets. Do you know how easy it is to put Windows on that? But you don't really have to change much. So I think it's definitely a curiosity why it came out when it did. But I think it might have just been this idea that if Microsoft's going to put money behind the RT tablet, somebody else should. And if they didn't bother, if they came out with Windows on ARM and they didn't bother to even have their own hardware, I think we see even less support for RT, even though that seems like it's minuscule right now.
Yeah, I feel like RT is, they shouldn't redo it. They should come out with more models of Microsoft Surface, but they should all be Pro. They should all be x86, or they need to just make RT something entirely different. The fact that it's called Windows and looks like Windows, I think, is actually what's most confusing about it, because it doesn't work like Windows, and that's what confuses everybody.
I'm starting to like your little tablet collection, Tom.
Yeah, it's getting a little ridiculous.
You know what?
It all started with this one right here. That's what began the madness. All right. So I'm going to have to pay for all my iOS apps again when iOS 7 comes out. What the heck is that about?
Not necessarily. Renee Ritchie over at iMore has a really good write-up about the fact that Since iOS 7 Beta 3 came out, and we saw a little bit more refining of iOS 7, which was a huge shock to a lot of people at Apple's announcement, where we saw the difference in flattening of icons and the way things move, he says developers may really use this opportunity to rebuild an app from scratch. You kind of have to if you want to make it look cool in the iOS 7 world, which is inevitable, and to keep up with the new dynamic. And to do that, depending on how big your operation is, users might have to pay for your app again. Now, you might say, what? No, if I pay for an app once, it gets updated indefinitely, and I shouldn't have to pay for it again, even on other devices. He and John Gruber over at Darien Fireball both link to a post by Gideon Mehu of Icon Factory. They're the makers of Twitterific, which has been one of the oldest apps in the App Store since the dawn of the App Store, but they make other apps as well, who says, I suspect there will be a surprising number of developers who will use the launch of the new OS to completely reboot their app. And why not? The visual and interactive paradigms of iOS 7 mark a natural breaking off point and a perfect opportunity to recoup costs. Some existing paid apps might even adopt an iOS 7 only strategy, which means that they'll have no choice but to charge again. Now, you could think of this, Renee makes a good comparison to something like an MP3. You buy an MP3, it's not very expensive, but if you really like the song and then a remix comes out, well, you buy that too. It's a little bit of a, hey, if an app is being worked on day and night for weeks or months at a time by a developer group, well, you might have to pay something along the lines of what a fancy coffee might cost. I guess I want to ask you guys, and again, we don't exactly know how this is going to shake out until iOS 7 does reboot and we see who jumps on board, but with numbers showing paid apps on the decline for iOS, it's a story we talked about yesterday, do we think this is a dangerous strategy to force developers to have to do a lot of extra work for iOS 7 and then end up charging consumers who don't want to pay at all?
I got a better metaphor for you.
All right.
Think about iPad apps, right? Often, if there's an iPad app comes out and you have the iPhone version, it just automatically shows up. They give you the iPad app, which they had to create a separate version, even though it's unified, right?
Yeah.
Other times they say, nope, want the iPad version, you got to buy it. It's separate. It's a whole separate thing. So there's already a model for that on people. The difference is it's going to be on the same phone. And so it all is in the messaging. A lot of people won't do this because they don't want to risk angering the customers. But a lot of people say, oh, well, there's now a new maxi version or a supercharged version for iOS 7, and you can continue to use the old one, or you can upgrade to the new one. It's all about the sell, right? And what the market will bear, and whether people see enough value to go like, oh, okay, I can plop down another 99 cents for that. What would be cool is if there were some mechanism where they could give you a discount if you were a previous owner somehow. I don't think that exists.
As long as these apps don't like lose functionality or break functionality of the older ones, I don't think this would be a huge problem. I know when it comes to like regular computer programs, like I think Pathfinder is one of the ones I used to use all the time on my Mac. There was an upgrade, I think, from 3 to 4 to 5 or something. One of them actually had a paid upgrade. You couldn't just upgrade for free. And I didn't really have a problem with that because there was a lot more features there. I'm used to that with regular PC and Mac programs. The question is whether people will be okay with that on their phones because the culture there is very different. You bought it once. Why do I have to pay again? Well, people are getting more familiar with in-app purchases, so maybe an iOS 7 upgrade could simply be, hey, would you like to upgrade? Push this little button. People seem to be more amenable to that because they're not being forced to change something, but they can if they want to. I think a lot of people are doing a lot of work to make their apps look good for iOS 7, but I don't think they really need to shift anything. It's not like when they did Retina, where you had to change all your graphics to make sure they are of a high enough resolution to look good. This is redesigning for the sake of redesigning.
Well, no, it's not just redesigning. It's the navigation properties of iOS 7 as well. There is work that developers have to do individually as a third-party app that might be downloaded on anybody's phone to not seem a little bit first-gen of iOS. Sorry, Tom, I stepped on you.
No, you took the words right out of my mouth and probably better than I could have said them. The only thing I might add is there are also a lot of apps that haven't changed significantly over the years. So in addition to tweaking them to make sure they work properly in the new iOS 7 visual identity and the new iOS 7 way of doing things, they might also want to take that time to be like, you know what, we've been meaning to fix a few things in this legacy app for a long time anyway. And doing it from the ground up may work. Maybe the best way to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Sony has got a high-end camera attachment for smartphones coming? At least that's the rumor.
Yeah, there's a rumor from Sony Alpha Rumors, which obviously covers rumors, reports that Sony's planning a lens camera accessory for mobile devices. Now, this device wouldn't have a screen of its own, and it looks like a lens you'd put on a regular DSLR, except the lens would have a built-in imaging sensor. Now, this lens camera would transmit images via NFC and Wi-Fi to a tablet or smartphone, so you could use that as a viewfinder, or you could have your pictures taken there. It could be mounted to one of those devices, or you could use it separately. So it's kind of like just this little scope you'd have on you. It uses the same sensor and lens as the Sony RX100II, which uses a 1-inch 20.2 megapixel sensor and a Carl Zeiss lens. Sony Alpha Rumors rates its rumors on a scale of 1 to 5. And on their website right now, they said it's a 5, which means almost certainly correct. And they said it's confirmed rumor coming from their top sources. So this isn't just some crazy product, even though it's still a rumor. And the site also reports that there's going to be a second model with a smaller sensor and a larger zoom. You know, I've seen a lot of phones with really crappy cameras. If this is true, I think it could be awesome. Sarah, would you be thinking about putting a Sony lens on your iPhone or, like, buy your iPhone?
Yeah, I absolutely would. Sony's really killing it in the sort of DSLR and making high-end Sony camera equipment lately. In fact, I was just out with a friend last night who was oohing and aahing over this new Sony mirrorless full-frame camera that he had. It was taking beautiful pictures. And I love the idea of this. Sony saying, listen, we understand that not everybody's going to carry a whole separate camera. You've always got your smartphone. That's where you're taking the majority of your pictures. But we can make your pictures really, really awesome with an attachment that you could more easily carry around with you on a regular basis. I love this idea. And if it's a real product, I want it.
Yeah, I think what is intriguing about this, too, is it would be easiest to make this work in Android. I'm curious on Wi-Fi and definitely not NFC, how this is going to work in iOS. And I could see Sony saying, you know what, we're putting this out for Android. Because universally, Android users complain about cameras in Android phones. At least my wife, as a representative anyway, I hear about this all the time from her. So if Sony comes out and says, hey, we're giving all Android users this amazing camera attachment, you can use it on any Android phone. Sorry, iPhone users, you're stuck with the one that's built in there. I think that could be an interesting feature to pull people over to Android. Jason, I'm curious what you think of that, being the host of All About Android.
Well, I think you're right that Android devices seem to more or less have, you know, not the perfect camera. They're getting better. You know, if it's a separate attachable kind of thing to go along with it, something tells me that that's not going to quite take the world by storm as far as that's concerned. It's a nice option. And that actually speaks to, as far as Android is concerned, one of the things that people that are really in Android really like are these kind of out of the box kind of ideas. But is it going to be this widespread adopted thing that Sony's going to load millions upon millions of these things that talk with your, you know, with your phone to give it better camera capabilities? I don't know. Having a separate thing kind of shoots that down a little bit.
I definitely like the idea of having separate accessories, because sometimes you got a device that can really do everything else great, like the Moto Droid Max, or whatever the hell that thing's called. Russell uses it all the time. It has the worst camera I've ever seen. It always looks like somebody has put Vaseline on it, but the phone itself is fantastic, except for this horrible, horrible sensor. If you could actually switch out parts or have these accessories, because these are becoming your computers, so why not have these not necessarily attachments, but these devices that work with it? I think that'd be really neat. And the other thing is, I believe iOS does have some apps, remote viewfinders for like GoPro and things, so it could work via Wi-Fi or something, not NFC, although the next phone is rumored to have NFC. I think this could be pretty cool for Sony. It just seems like a very unusual play.
Yeah.
But if you get in the door of using Sony products, their Xperia line of phones is actually pretty good. So it could get people to go into that halo effect and get a Sony Xperia Z. But I would love to have a camera that's just basically a little scope and you can just upload it later. You know, what's the whole point of the body if it has the image sensor built in?
Right.
Yeah, the wireless
is just going to transfer it somewhere eventually anyway. I mean, who's editing anything on their cameras? It's almost just takes out that bulky middleman.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
This, photos this to the like cloud.
Evolution. Good job, Sony. Well done.
Yeah,
make it happen.
Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. more than ever, your online freedom, your online privacy is getting scarce, it seems like. You need to protect it. If not for the tinfoil hat reasons, which are in many cases perfectly legitimate, if for the practical reasons of you need to be able to use some Wi-Fi when you're out and about. If you're at a coffee shop, you're traveling at a hotel, you're in an airport, you want to use that internet, but it's not safe to use it. If you've got any sensitive data going out, and you probably do. That's why you need a VPN solution. Virtual private network, like the one from ProXPN, works with almost any internet connection, and it creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN. That means your web browser, means your email, means your file sharing, your instant messaging program. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes. Disguises your physical location. Nobody can know where you are because they've got all different servers all around the world, and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel. Protect yourself against things like the crazy six strikes type rules. Those seem to be falling out of favor, but they still exist. Bypass internet filtering or blocked websites. Sometimes even hotels just block websites for weird reasons. And bypass geographical restrictions for internet content and online video. They have servers in US, UK, Asia, and more. ProXPN software for Windows and Mac offers advanced controls, allowing you to select the programs and ports you want to anonymously route through ProXPN servers. I use it on my phone as well. And Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So try it out. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. It's not that bad, but we've got a special offer that makes it even cheaper. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today and for protecting my bits when I was out traveling last week. We got another earnings report to talk about. Google revenue was in line, but their income missed badly. They had $14.1 billion. That was up 19% year over year. They expected 14.42. That was pretty close. Earnings per share, though, were $9.50, and analysts expected $10.78. And the reason is that cost per click of advertising is going down for Google, 6% lower than 2012. And the reason for that is mostly because of mobile. They're having the same problem Facebook did. How do we make more money on mobile? Mobile just doesn't cost as much. Google has started something called an enhanced campaign. And you may not care too much about this, but just to summarize it for you. If somebody's buying an ad now, instead of just buying it on the desktop search, which is a mature market, they're also automatically going to get it on mobile and on phone. Now, you can opt out of the phone, but you can't opt out of the tablet. And what that does is it increases the cost per click for Google of tablet and lets them make more money off of mobile. They say that this program started too late to have any impact on this past quarter, and it's going to turn out to be great soon. BMO Capital Markets disagrees. They say investors should assume continued margin erosion, as they say, quote, new investments will never match the margins of the core search business. Mobile's just never going to make the money the desktop search says. On the other hand, Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster, who we know from his Apple rumors, says enhanced campaigns is the biggest change in the Google ad platform to date, and it will likely take 6 to 12 months for the positive impact to show in the numbers. Now, why should you care about this? Well, if you want Google to continue to make self-driving cars and Google Glass and lifting balloons with the internet around the world, this is where they're getting all their money. Sarah, do you think they can profit on mobile any better than Facebook has?
That's a really good question. Facebook has shown that it has a game plan on mobile. It was slow to get into the market, but now that it's there, I don't think anyone is under the impression that Facebook can't do this. Along the same lines, I think Google has just a bit of a learning curve here. Let's make sure that we're able to profit the way that Google's core business has known to do on mobile. But 6 to 12 months at the minimum from Gene Munster, even with that said, that's a lot of sort of fear, uncertainty, and doubt that can happen in the minds of analysts and consumers and stock prices and Google having less money to do fun play around stuff that we've grown used to it doing. So, yeah, I mean, even if this is not anything that Google can actually make as successful as far as its previous margins go. It seems like kind of a scary way to go into the next potential year.
Yeah, but it also makes sense, though, why Google continues to make apps for iOS. The fact that it can be on pretty much the majority of every device, not just on the web and the browsers and things that way, but having these apps that have these ads built in, it also makes sense. Some of their acquisitions make more sense to me now. If you're looking at, like, Zagat's reviews, or if you're looking at Waze, if they can somehow put those together, you can have ads in Waze through Google. They're going to make a ton of money this way. So they might not be able to make money the way they want to normally with their old methods, but by having these apps that can have more and more ads, I would think that would give them more revenue in the long run. It is a little bit surprising to see that they were down, but it just I think this will probably be good that Google will be making apps for iOS and Android, and pretty much it'll probably be ad-laden, but they'll be targeted well.
All right. Another industry that's always looking at how much money it can make is music. And U.S. music sales are down, Sarah. This is bucking a recent trend anyway.
Yeah. Nielsen numbers on streamed music show that for the first 6 months of 2013, streaming music is actually up by 24% to 51 billion streams. Overall, sales of albums and track equivalents were down by 4.6%. over a year ago, now hovering at about 210 million units. That's because people don't want to buy music anymore. So streaming is up, but the overall trend is on the decline. Now, if you piece out sales of music, digital and then physical CD sales were down by 14.2% to 78.2 million units. Digital sales were up 6.3% to 60.8 million units. Not a huge surprise there. Surprised that CD sales are even as strong as they are. It's actually kind of interesting. I mean, if you're thinking physical, vinyl albums again rose a little bit. It's that niche market that just seems to be doing well. 2.9 million vinyl albums sold. That is up a very impressive 33.5%.
Oh, almost 33 1/3%.
Almost. That would have been awesome. Really would have been. Just above that. All right, so let's go back to streaming music. Okay, the trend is going towards streaming music. Got it. What was the most popular streamed track? Well, it was the Harlem Shake, which was a viral video slash song. You can probably think of the song in your head, but you likely didn't stream that from Spotify or RDO or Deezer or one of those other sites. You probably saw a YouTube video, which then in turn drove a lot of music streaming. So that's sort of a weird, strange anomaly, you know, that we haven't really seen things like that happen before. I mean, unless you think of something like Gangnam Style. In general, the top 10 top stream songs are just popular songs, you know, in mainstream stuff. I don't know. I guess my question for you guys is, we keep hammering home the fact that music streaming is here to stay. People seem to really like it. Do artists have any choice but to just suck it up and try to benefit more from the new way of doing things?
I don't know if the artists have to worry so much as it's the record companies. They originally were hesitant to do the streaming services, but now there's about a billion of them. There's, you know, the Google services, iTunes Radio. So I don't know if artists are going to be stomping their feet. Like, I think it was Radiohead. They're the company that left.
Point of Radiohead stomping their feet is because little emerging indie artists are the ones that are making less money and therefore never really going to make it big on a streaming model.
So Radiohead.
We keep saying Radiohead. I started this mistake, by the way, so I feel like I need to.
Okay. Tom York of Radiohead.
Tom York with his other bands, not Radiohead itself.
Okay.
But go ahead.
So then Tom York needs to come up with his own streaming services that take care of indie artists, because the thing is, streaming services, the way this stuff's going, it's basically about broadband and wireless penetration, right? It used to be that you would download music because you would not have a steady connection enough to constantly get this music. Same thing with video. That's why all this television stuff's happening on the web now. So streaming just seems like it's just the byproduct of having an always-on device. Because it used to be that you didn't have, well, maybe when I was a kid, we didn't have always internet-connected devices. So you would download or buy a CD for offline times. But yeah, I think the artists and record labels have no choice. They have to be on the streaming services.
We started downloading music illegally or illegally because it was more convenient than buying a CD, right? And having to deal with discs. You could just have your music right with you wherever you were. We started streaming music in large numbers because people generally feel it's more convenient. I don't have to think about managing my MP3s and what device they're on. They're just always there for me in the cloud. So I'm shocked that as the marketplace moves to a more convenient way of consuming the content, that the industry is so slow to adapt to monetizing it. It's just not like the recording industry.
That was really good, deadpan.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, I think this is just a fight over the monetization as the market shifts to doing streaming, right? The industry wants to milk more money out of the Spotify's and Pandora's out of there. And that's why we see these studies from them every day. And these services want to keep those costs as low as possible so they can make as much money as possible. They'll figure it out. I have no doubt about it. Spotify's already, I threw this link in there, Sarah. I don't know if you saw it. Spotify's already putting out studies saying, you know, music piracy rises after festivals. And we think it's because the music they hear at the festivals isn't available for purchase or on Spotify. And so if you put it on Spotify, they wouldn't pirate as much.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't seen that story. Well, you know, Spotify, they're pretty good at spinning things in their favor. You know, if you think about, okay, let those top 10 songs, right? Songs that are very, very, very popular in pop culture, like the Macklemore freaking thrift shop song, right? That was number two after Harlem Shake. Those are the sorts of things that don't really drive album sales. People just want to download the song, right? So you can go to the iTunes store, download a song for 99 cents. Okay, whatever, that's fine. That's been going on for a while. But the streaming model just makes so much more sense because that's one of these things that's popular and you kind of get it out of your system. And then what do you do with that file? More and more, that doesn't really make sense. You just want to listen to it. You want to have the right to listen to it. You listen to it 10 times a day for 20 days, then you never want to hear it again. And the streaming model is great because then you don't have these remnants all over the place of these songs that were really popular a year ago that you don't care about anymore.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of ways to say, well, Spotify is paying more than radio. If you think about how many people listen to a particular radio station at any given time, how much money is being paid to serve them, et cetera, et cetera. That's why I think this is a lot of negotiating, positioning, and we're just waiting for them to catch up with what we want to do with our music, which is listen to it. We'll pay. And that's the thing. There's this myth that maybe we don't want to pay it. We'll pay. We don't want to pay a lot, but we will pay. People will. The money is there for the music industry. They just didn't figure out how to divvy it up. Another market that's lagging behind maybe what people would like it to do is television over the internet. All Things D has a story today that echoes what Justin Robert Young of NSFW show and often a Tech News Today guest has been saying for a couple of months now, I guess.
I think Sarah actually came up with this idea a long time ago about this. But Peter Kafka wrote a letter to Apple, Google, Microsoft, and I think Amazon, because the letter starts, "Dear Tim, Larry, Steve, and Jeff," I'm assuming Jeff is Jeff Bezos, he's saying that what these companies should do if they want to be taken seriously in the TV world is purchase the rights to the NFL to make web TV a reality. Now, he says these tech players are just reselling TV's leftovers or floating proposals that'll end up replicating the existing system, making reference to the whole Apple TV working with Time Warner, and that would just have this cable box replacement device. And Kafka says, go after the NFL, particularly the Sunday Ticket. DirecTV's four-year deal expires at the end of the 2014 season, and he notes that the DirecTV company pays $1 billion per year for Sunday Ticket. Now, he cites Rupert Murdoch's Fox Network. Remember, that wasn't a real network until they got sports? Well, they picked up the NFL, and that made them pretty legit, as it comes. Kafka comes, he says, to assume the cost of $1.5 billion a year, the companies would lose money on the deal, but it would make them a major player in TV on the web. And he compares the cost to other projects. So at $1.5 billion a year, it's $6 billion for 4 years. That's half of what Google paid for Motorola. It's only 4% of Apple's cash pile. Now, the NFL on the internet box. Sarah, do you think that's the only way these tech companies can really become a serious player in the TV market?
No, it's not the only way, but it's the best way. If you've got the NFL, you have... It completely changes things. Let's be honest. It's the most popular sport, most widely watched in the U.S., partly because the season's short and it's very exciting. But yeah, I mean, I'm a cord cutter, Ayaz. I don't know if you were aware of
Are
that.
You now?
Yeah,
Are
and
you?
That's and yeah, oh. mm-hmm, and oh, that's okay. That's one of the things that I can watch anything on network station, and that is, you know, fairly easy to do on Sundays and the like because I have an over-the-air antenna. But anything on ESPN or, you know, all that good stuff, I can't get. I'd have to go to a bar to watch it. So if there was a way for me to get the NFL on, you know, in some sort of subscription model, I would do it. I would. I would pay. Now, you know, it can't be that crazy, that outlandish for me to pay a little bit extra, but that would be the number one way for everyone to wake up and say, wait a second, what are our options really? Because let's be honest, it is a huge part of the U.S. culture for many people, not everybody, although football is really great. And it would bring the whole idea of alternative ways to consume content truly mainstream.
Well, remember, let's think this through too. DirecTV has NFL Sunday Ticket right now. We don't see everyone in the country getting DirecTV, so it's not a panacea. But part of the reason is because you have to have a satellite dish put on your house, which may or may not be possible in your location, and you have to pay for DirecTV service to get Sunday Ticket. That's how DirecTV makes their money off this. They use Sunday Ticket to lure people in to get their service. And I think what Peter Kafka is pointing out here, which is pretty brilliant, is these companies like Microsoft and Apple, they have enough cash, Google too, that they could forego that and say, you know what, we're probably going to lose money off this. We'll make the money off of selling the devices and selling other services, but you don't have to pay for those up front. You just buy the device, whatever it is. And I think it's super smart. And if one of these companies was able to pull off the negotiations to make it happen, you would see that console immediately jump to the front. And Sarah, I think you're right. I don't think it's the only way to win, but it would be the thing that put consoles into people's homes, at least in the United States.
I'm just trying to think. I think the best fit for this right now, in my mind, might be Amazon. They might be able to do this because they don't really care about selling hardware. They want to sell you everything else. So who can make the most money by taking this loss up front? We've seen Amazon do this with the hardware, the Kindle Fire, those kinds of things. So maybe they'd be willing to do this if they had enough money to pull this off. And they're pretty much on every device. And there's that rumored set-top box. It could be interesting if one of these companies would just pick up the NFL, because Apple TV already has, and the Roku, MLB TV, NHL, and access to lots of other sports. If that's the big hook, and that's the thing that's stopping people from cutting the cord, is sports, that would no longer be a reason. And Kafka even has this throwaway line about maybe they should just buy Aereo just to take care of all their bases. I'm like, well, it's a throwaway line, but that'd be really crazy if one of these companies was like, we'll just set up our own mini antennas and we'll broadcast that to these regions. It could be pretty interesting, but also it could really tick off the media companies.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Last night, Pollen Storm's Wootstock 5.0 kicked off at San Diego Comic-Con, and there was a surprise opening. Pollen Storm have a song called Write Like the Wind, which opening lines are, George R.R. Martin, please write and write faster. You're not going to get any younger, you know. And it's all about pushing George R.R. Martin to finish writing his popular Song of Ice and Fire series, which is the underpinnings for the Game of Thrones series on HBO. Well, I don't know if you've got the video ready to go, Jason, but Veronica Belmont and I were backstage, and this is her video of what happened. As they began the song, George R. Martin himself walked out on stage. He grabbed Storm's guitar, threw it to the ground, and beat the crap out of it, and then began wielding the remains, threatening Paul and Storm.
Why?
Because they're singing this song about, you know, hurry up and write the books.
Well, he needs to
He's
hurry
He's tired
up.
Of it. My well, goodness. Neil Gaiman also wrote a blog post saying, George R. R. Martin is not your bitch. Stop giving him a hard time about writing the books. And guess who pops out of the backstage next? Neil Gaiman comes out and starts chiding Paul and Storm for this.
It's like the WWE of fantasy books, isn't it?
Yeah. I just absolutely love George R. R. Martin coming out and destroying a guitar on stage. How rock and roll is that?
Yeah. It's
and then
pretty
just
crazy.
Standing right behind all the action with his arms folded, like, I'm going to kick your butt.
And notice, though, he's refusing to write this whole time.
Yeah, totally. He's not writing now. Get to it.
Ayaz has the perfect troll fan reaction there. Like, you know, you could have spent that time writing.
Yeah. You could have. He just stood there.
You want me to write? I'm not going to write. You can't make me write.
I'm also against guitar violence. I love guitars.
Yeah,
that
was hard to watch.
Those things get destroyed.
Definitely hard to watch.
I have a feeling that might have been a cheaper guitar.
No, any guitar is a good guitar.
Yeah.
You guys, that was real. It was not staged. That was real. That stuff is real.
He just came out of nowhere, man. Like, totally went crazy.
Who's that bearded man? Oh,
finished writing the book and buy them a new guitar.
It was scary. All right, let's move on to the calendar.
The Leap Motion controller is set to arrive Monday, July 22nd, although some pre-orderers say, wait a second, we've already gotten ours. They've shipped, so... shipping as of today. And the open source conference, OSCON, kicks off in Portland on Monday. And we have our own Randall Schwartz from Floss Weekly going to be there. So if you're in the area, you're at the conference, do say hello.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a message from Alan doing my job for me. Thank you. I was confused by a description of the Ouya campaign for developers, so I went and read a CNET article describing it, and it makes more sense to me now. Ouya is not starting a Kickstarter campaign. Instead, they are matching funds for game developers who raise money using Kickstarter, as long as they meet their goal and they raise at least $50,000. So Ouya is basically giving a big thank you to Kickstarter and developers by encouraging developers to raise funds on Kickstarter. Alan, thank you.
That makes more sense. I get it now. Thanks, Alan.
Got another email from Nate who says, I wanted to comment on that in-app payments and free apps discussion in yesterday's show because I don't think you mentioned gaming, which I believe is the area this model is having the most worrying effect on. The volume of free apps has forced developers into a corner where they feel the only way to get a chance of being seen is to be free, but they have to centralize in-app payments as a core mechanic of their app from day one in order to eventually make any money. This isn't too bad for standard apps, but for games, it can be devastating. It's forcing artists and designers to become salesmen, designing games around the selling and reselling themselves, and that's not conducive to great or memorable relationships with a franchise. One game I think I heard about from Sarah on iPad today is Bombcats. Actually, no, I haven't heard of it, but it has cats in it, so I like it already, which is a great physics game utterly destroyed by game mechanics that exist only to sell ways to beat the levels more easily. The developer blogged about how he realized this ruined the game, even though he felt forced by the marketplace to do so. And for the Android release, the game will cost money to download and feature no in-app payments. Huh. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play with that app, but it sounds like that's a really good example of a developer saying, I thought that this was my only option, and it completely backfired. It wasn't a fun experience.
But there are definitely examples of freemium games where they don't ruin the game with in-app payments. You can still enjoy it for free. It just enhances the game if you pay for it. So I don't think that balance is unachievable. But this is a big problem, not just for apps, but for MMORPGs. They were talking about it on The Instance last weekend that when Blizzard canceled Project Titan, or at least reduced the team, one of the theories is that they decided they're going to have to make that game free to play. And so they had to start rethinking it from the ground up as a free to play MMORPG, online role playing game. And World of Warcraft is one of the last remaining holdouts not to go free to play. So hopefully there's a way to do this kind of thing, whether it's on an app or an MMORPG, that doesn't ruin the gameplay. But it is a good point from Nate. Thanks for writing in, man. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Tech News Today. Thank you all for listening. Len Peralta, you, as usual, have been doing a great job. Folks, if you're not watching the video version, at least on Fridays, go download it, because you got to see this stuff that Len is making here. Can we flip through what you've been working on?
Absolutely. Story about Microsoft taking a hit because of the Surface RT or the Surface, it just reminded me of these two guys here saying, I'm not going to try it. You try it. I'm not going to try it. Where's Mikey? So Mikey should really be the one that saves Microsoft here in the end. An app again when iOS 7 comes out, this is kind of a simple one. The guy's just like, hey, this is deja vu. Instagram too. It's a sort of a new app, but not really.
Instagrammier.
Instagrammier, yes. This is a simple little drawing about the Sony phone attachment. I mean, the Sony camera attachment onto your phone. Just thought it was really funny to have this. I see these huge...
just have it constantly stuck there to the side.
Yeah, exactly. That's what your phone's going to look like probably circa 2014. Something you wrote in the story about Google and their money problems says it reminded me of that video game Gauntlet. where the elf needs food badly.
Wizard needs food badly. Wizard
the
is
Google
about
needs
to die.
Food badly. Yes, exactly. Well, the Google is not about to die, but you could at least give him some food, eh? Right? They probably need
Google
something.
Google is about to suffer eroding share prices.
I'm going to switch up stories here. The buying the NFL, I thought would be really funny to buy it with Bitcoins, of course, because that is the new currency that everybody's going to be using. And finally, the most hottest streaming video for the next 6 months as of today will be host Sarah Lane doing the Harlem Shake. And this is a little... little drawing of Sarah doing the Harlem Shake.
I think we know which print's going to be available.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, heck yeah.
Clean that up a little. Yeah, probably the elf one. Right.
Right, exactly.
Looking good. Look how high I can kick.
Yeah.
Elbows amazing. Up.
Good job.
Awesome.
You're a pro. Thank you, Len. And remind people where that, because then people are always like, I want to see these prints again. I want to take a look at them. I want to buy some of them. Where do they go?
Oh, yeah. Well, they can follow me on Twitter. That's where all the receptacle for all things Len Peralta are is. It's at Len Peralta on Twitter, and you can find out about, I'm going to have this up in the store momentarily. And also, I'm running a Kickstarter, too, so check that out. I have one of my posts there is about trying to bring me back to podcasting. So,
yeah, one of the OG podcasts, Jawbone Radio, and one of my favorites. Before I even knew Len, I loved this podcast. So go check that out as well, lenperalta.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Len. And thank you all for listening or watching. Don't forget, you can get the video version. And then you can go to the subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place where you can vote on stories, submit them, vote on other people's submissions. We look at it every day to kind of take the temperature. What are people seeming like they're most interested in these days? Helps us make our lineup. Also, don't forget about our best of for the entire Twit Network. Any show you see, including Tech News Today, you say, oh, that was a really great moment. They should save that and put it in the best of show at the year's end. Go to twit.tv/best of. Tell us everything you can think of about that moment, and it helps us create that best of show at the end of the year. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. That's got links to all of our show notes and everything there. You can email us TNT@twit.tv. Please do. And you can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with Morgan Webb as our guest. See you then.
Whee!